and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin with the release of the long-anticipated report by the Department of Justice Inspector General, who investigated former FBI Director Comey's handling of the Hillary Clinton email saga, which Trump has relentlessly tried to build up as a criminal outrage worse than Watergate in order to distract from the ongoing Mueller investigation into him and his family. Lisa Kern Griffin, a professor of law at Duke University who clerked for Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor and spent 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the Chicago United States Attorney's Office, joins us. We will discuss how the report's main finding is that Comey was insubordinate in his handling of the Clinton investigation, but it finds there was no bias in the FBI's decision to clear Clinton. However, buried in the 568 pages of this report are seven words that Trump and his Fox and Friends media allies are blowing up into a smoking gun to prove the deep state is out to get Trump. And that is an exchange of texts between a former Army officer and FBI agent, Peter Strzok, and his girlfriend, FBI lawyer Lisa Page, who asked rhetorically, "Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right?" To which Strzok fatefully replied, "No, no, he won't. We'll stop it." Then we'll speak with Emma Brown, an investigative reporter at The Washington Post, where her latest article is Inside Casa Padre, the converted Walmart where the U.S. is holding nearly 1,500 immigrant children. We'll discuss the first access the press has had to a detention facility housing some of the 11,200 children now in federal custody. And while the excuse is given that the privacy of children is being protected, the U.S. public knows very little about the fate of children as young as breastfeeding babies who have been ripped from their mother's arms at the southern border, and the conditions in which they are being detained under what the Trump administration calls a zero-tolerance policy. Then finally, we'll get an update on the worsening situation in Yemen, which is already a humanitarian catastrophe, as a Saudi-led force moves on the port city of Hodeidah to close off the only access to aid for a country under a merciless blockade, which has resulted in a third of the country's population facing starvation. An expert on Yemen, Dr. Sheila Carapico, a professor of political science and international studies at the University of Richmond and the author of Arabia Incognita, Dispatches from Yemen and the Gulf, joins us to discuss the extent to which the U.S. has blood on its hands as a result of supporting and arming the Saudi war now threatening to destroy a city of 600,000. And joining us now is Lisa Kern Griffin, a professor of law at Duke University, who focuses on evidence theory, constitutional criminal procedure, and federal criminal justice policy. Previously, she clerked for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor of the Supreme Court of the United States and also spent 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the Chicago United States Attorney's Office. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lisa Kern Griffin.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Lisa, what do you make of the long-anticipated Inspector General's report from the FBI looking into the way FBI Director Comey handled the Hillary Clinton email saga? And of course, just in terms of context, that President Trump has been relentlessly trying to build up this as a criminal outrage worse than Watergate. So did the smoking gun get delivered for Donald Trump?
I think that he will say that it did, but I don't think that it necessarily did. It's kind of mixed. There is something in the report for everyone. On the one hand, it does indeed criticize Director Comey for the timing and nature of his announcements with respect to the investigation, but it also affirms that there was no bias found in the investigation, and it confirms that the decision not to prosecute Hillary Clinton was likely the correct one given the standards that were applied. And you might think that that would shut down the sort of lock her up discourse and put an end to the story of that investigation. But unfortunately, the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails has been conflated with the Russia investigation, even though they are two decidedly separate things. And the fact that there are additional texts released in this report from FBI agents who were working on this investigation and who did briefly have some crossover assignments with the special counsel's investigation that are critical of the president and indeed suggest that the agents wanted him not to be elected in the first place will be trumpeted by the administration, and I'm sure that it will feed the deep state narrative we've been hearing.
But does the report in any way provide the context, which has always seemed extraordinary? Everybody, I think, and particularly the candidate herself, Hillary Clinton, believes that when FBI Director Comey went public a few days before the elections talking about some new emails that surfaced on the computer belonging to Hillary Clinton's aide, Humer, whose husband was already in disgrace, and it turned out that there was nothing there, but he felt the need to go public for whatever reasons, most of which people find pretty hard to believe. But the general consensus is it certainly hurt Hillary Clinton. Whether it denied her the presidency is a matter of debate. But I've always been astounded that President Trump has been able to make hay out of criticizing somebody who might well have helped make him president.
The president versus Director Comey narrative that is so much at the forefront now is one of the strangest turns of events in this entire saga, because there are a number of analysts who think that Director Comey is the best thing that happened to the president in the course of the campaign. And there isn't any evidence that Director Comey hurt the president in any way. And the decision not to prosecute Hillary Clinton now seems to be affirmed in a variety of ways. And somehow the president has managed, by conflating the conduct of the director in the course of the announcements made in the Clinton investigation with the connection between Director Comey and the launch of the Russia investigation, he's changed the story completely so that anything that casts aspersions on the FBI at the time of the Clinton email investigation seems to work in his favor with respect to the Russia investigation. I agree with you. It's a very strange turn of events.
But it would seem to me that within the 568 pages of this report, and arguably that's a lot about nothing, because I'm not sure at the end of the day, one, that this report was justified or necessary, and two, that the efforts sort of tantamount to the and the input and the, I guess the expense are tantamount to whatever takeaway there is. There just doesn't seem to be a lot there. But what clearly President Trump and his allies in the media are focusing on, and I've been getting emails all day from right-wing media outlets and think tanks heralding what is essentially only seven words in this 568-page report. And those words are in response to a text from the former U.S. Army officer and FBI agent Peter Strzok's girlfriend, FBI lawyer Lisa Page. She asked him rhetorically by text, "Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right?" To which Strzok fatefully replied, "No, no, he won't. We'll stop it." And those are the seven deadly words, are they not?
I believe that that is the thing we are going to be hearing about the most from the report. I have not read the entire report, but as I understand the excerpts that I've read and the analysis that I have seen, it doesn't make a lot of news per se. It's a sort of assessment of things that are already in the public domain and that were, and for the most part, already widely known about the conduct of a variety of people involved in the Clinton email investigation. But those seven words, that exchange, cryptic though it may be, I don't know what is meant by that. I don't know whether "we'll stop it" is a reference to voting or a reference to some other action that someone might take. It may just be a rhetorical flourish, or it may mean something more sinister than that. But it didn't, whatever it was supposed to mean, didn't happen. The president was elected. I mean, if this was a deep state conspiracy, it was a very poorly executed one, because at the end of the day, he did, in fact, win the Electoral College victory. If not, of course, he didn't win the popular vote. And it's troubling that I think we are going to see this hurt the FBI even more than it has already been hurt. in the vortex between the Clinton email investigation and the special counsel's investigation into Russian meddling in the election.
And again, I'm speaking with Lisa Kern Griffin, a professor of law at Duke University who focuses on evidence theory, constitutional criminal procedure, and federal criminal justice policy. Previously, she clerked for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor of the Supreme Court of the United States and also spent 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the Chicago United States Attorney's Office. So even if there is something to those seven words, no, no, he won't, we'll stop it, one FBI agent, it's not going to stop anybody from becoming president. I mean, isn't the implication here that Strzok is just the tip of an iceberg, that somehow there's a whole bunch of deep staters like him? Is that the case that President Trump and his allies are trying to make?
I think they'll make all kinds of different cases. I mean, they're not really prone to consistency, so there'll be different narratives that are spun out of this. Coming from all different directions, a rogue agent who was later somehow involved in the special counsel's investigation as well might be one version of it. The deep state, the we referenced here is a whole deep state cabal that was working against the president in the course of the campaign, that law enforcement agencies and the Department of Justice are somehow inherently corrupt and deeply corrupt, and that this is yet another example of that. There are many different ways in which I expect the conservative media will be spinning these few words of uncertain meaning in this private text exchange. I do, though, still think that, as many people have pointed out, yes, it is unfortunate, it is inappropriate, it is rightly criticized in this report, but it is not true that just because people are working in and for the federal government, they are not permitted to have views on elected officials or campaigning officials. And FBI agents have views. If they lean in any direction, they lean right as an organization. And I'm sure many of them, and certainly, for example, the New York FBI office, which had primary responsibility for the Hillary Clinton email investigation, leaned very strongly anti-Clinton. So you could spin the same narrative out on the other side. But they're entitled to those views, as all people are, and they're entitled even to express in private conversations those views. And nothing in the report, in fact, the report states that it's very clear there was no bias. There isn't anything implicating them in any conduct, actions, or bias that would themselves be nefarious. So it is a very unfortunate turn of phrase. We're going to be hearing it again and again. It probably doesn't mean anything at all.
But what's extraordinary is that this is old news. Back on the 2nd of December, the New York Times published the transcripts of these text messages between FBI lawyer Lisa Page and FBI agent Peter Strzok. And quite, I'd say, the balance of their criticism was pretty equally shared. She was very skeptical of Hillary Clinton and was more or less going to hold her nose and vote. And he wasn't particularly, he called himself a conservative Democrat, and he wasn't too thrilled with the choices either. So, again, there's not any context here, and I'm astounded that you could make hay out of such old news.
It is not a revelation. I think that the words themselves are the "we'll stop it," is a jarring turn of phrase. And I think for that reason, it's already been seized on by the communications office at the White House. I think we'll be hearing it from commentators in the days to come. There's a lot of other news right now that is not favorable for the president in terms of turns that are being taken in the special counsel's investigation, the New York Attorney General's suit against the Trump Foundation. There are a number of other things that they ran out, and the release of this report is fortuitous timing for them. At the same time, Director Comey has written an op-ed about his view that he understands that he's being criticized for some decisions that he's made, but he sees the Inspector General's report as a way of putting some of these things behind us and affirming the rule of law and the importance of scrutiny of actions taken in these settings. And there are other ways of reading the report. It certainly doesn't vindicate Director Comey, but it does suggest that he didn't make the wrong decision in not indicting Hillary Clinton, and that it might be time to put that particular narrative to rest as well.
Well, but the point is that Comey's been fired, Andrew McCabe's been fired, and other FBI agents that the Trump administration had problems with have been sort of sent off to some kind of internal Siberia. So it's not as if that the so-called villains in the piece, not that they really are, have already been punished. I mean, somebody recently suggested that if you watch Fox News, you would think that Hillary Clinton was president. I mean, that seems to be the broader kind of psychosis going on here. Who's really winning, I mean, in terms of the sort of injustice versus justice, or the imaginary injustice versus justice? I take your broader point that what this perhaps serves as a distraction from what Robert Mueller's up to. When do you think we'll get some clarity on this? Because this is not like what happened under the Whitewater thing that went on for like 8 years or something. This report may not necessarily, under the conditions that it was approved, be actually released to the public. And it's not like Watergate, where everybody saw it all unfold on their television screens. So to that extent, do you think that President Trump has an advantage, that he's able to muddy the waters and throw out these unsupported attacks to essentially condition the public to believe, not to believe this report if it comes out, and if and when it comes out, he's casting it as being politically biased?
I think that the president has a tremendous advantage in that he is tweeting, talking, and using certain conservative media as a mouthpiece for a narrative about the Mueller investigation that seems to have taken hold. I mean, it's undeniable that it is swaying public opinion about that investigation. And for their part, the investigators don't speak at all. They do their talking only in the courtroom, and they are in no way engaged in an effort to counteract whatever narrative the president chooses to put forward on any given day. Director Comey has been very vocal, of course, on his own behalf, and in telling some of the story of what happened before the special counsel was appointed. But as far as the conduct of the special counsel's investigation, that doesn't involve the time period of which Director Comey has written and spoken and he is editorializing about now. And there is no one telling that side of the story. And it's not clear at this juncture in what form and at what point in time that side of the story will come out, if ever.
Well, an awful lot has come out in the very, very good reporting from the New York Times and the Washington Post and other outlets, that if you put them all together, it's pretty hard not to see that something really happened here. This is not made up out of whole cloth.
I think that at this point, a significant portion of the public no longer cares. Mm-hmm. I think at least the firm base that the president seems to hold, that roughly 40% base, I think they are entirely persuaded that no matter what the investigation reveals, it was a witch hunt and the president has been wronged and the FBI is tainted. And that's where today's IG report is unhelpful, because it does, to some extent, again, cast an unflattering light on a handful of actors within the FBI who may have done nothing wrong, but were saying things that suggest bias. And that is the drumbeat that we are hearing about the Russia investigation. And the combination, the conflation of these two investigations is ultimately so damaging for the FBI, because it is in that confusion that the president has thrived.
Well, just in closing, it may well be that tomorrow, Paul Manafort, President Trump's first campaign, second, I guess he was, after Corey Lewandowski, campaign manager, might well have to go to jail. And we spoke before about how you made the point that the indictments really are the way that Mueller has of painting the picture of what he's working on and what perhaps he's leading towards. Do you expect any more of those? I mean, seeing Manafort go off to jail, does this sort of move the needle a little bit in the other direction?
It may move the needle a little bit in the direction of putting some pressure on Manafort. It's unclear whether he can be pressured into cooperating ultimately with the special counsel. Certainly being taken into custody is about as much pressure as one can apply, especially on a white-collar defendant like Paul Manafort. So I don't know how much we will learn about the course of the investigation beyond Paul Manafort's misconduct in trying to influence potential witnesses in the coming days in terms of whether or not he's taken into custody. But it may be a dangerous signal for the president if Paul Manafort is suddenly looking for a way to get out of custody. That development in the Michael Cohen case, there are a few other glimmers of information that will probably come out in the days and weeks to come. In terms of the main work of the special counsel investigation, they've been quiet for quite a while. They have been very quiet, and it's approaching summer, and you know, the midterm elections follow soon after that. And if there are going to be additional indictments, further information revealed, decisions made, it seems as though the end game, at least for maybe the midpoint of the investigation or some stopping point, has to be approaching in the months to come.
Well, Lisa Cohn Griffin, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Lisa Cohn Griffin. She's a professor of law at Duke University who focuses on evidence theory, constitutional criminal procedure, and federal criminal justice policy. And previously, she clerked for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor of the Supreme Court of the United States. And she also spent 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the Chicago United States Attorney's Office. Going to take a brief station break and back speaking with the Washington Post investor reporter about the converted Walmart where the U.S. is holding 1,500 immigrant children.